We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say? It's the CHGO Cubs podcast. It is the 11th of April, and we have a Cubs off day, but we still have a podcast. Luke Stuckmeyer, Ryan Herrera, Cody Del Mendo. We are ready to talk Cubs baseball with you. So we are 12 games into the season. Cubs are 7-5 after a dozen games. But what are the top 12 storylines 12 games into the season? That we're going to talk about that throughout the podcast. They're not going to be in any particular order. We just came up with 12 storylines that we think are the biggest 12 games into the season. They can be individual player storylines. They can be franchise storylines. They could be current major league team storylines. What are the 12 biggest storylines going into the season? So we got a lot to talk about. We want to make sure you sign up to be a diehard. Go to allchgo.com. Get that diehard membership. You make sure you get the newsletter from Ryan, because that's not free anymore unless you're a diehard.
Yeah, shout out to Eric, Joe, and Alex.
Thank you. Yeah, Eric, Joe, and Alex. Just about to look for that, because I knew we had three more. Yeah. It's the FOMO deal. Everybody's signing up, trying to get through it. You know, right. Make sure they get there in time, of course, for the big Bears draft coming up. We'll talk about that draft party maybe a little bit later. You got anything exciting you've been writing about?
I've been looking into, like, we've talked about Morel and Saez starts, and obviously.
Yeah, so coming some up. Of what we're talking about in this show.
Yeah.
Yesterday, people in the show were asking for a little Craig Council talk. You're going to get a little Craig Council talk. Should we get after it? No particular order?
I don't know. That's 12
storylines?
Let's get after it.
Let's get after it, because 12, we don't have all day. It's going to take a long time. Number one storyline, and again, this is in no particular order. We're just happen to be starting with the biggest one, no question about it, and that is Justin Steele's injury.
Yep.
He's going to be out at least a month, and I saw that he has started his own podcast now.
I did see
that. Friend of the show, Justin Steele, has started his own podcast. Good luck to him. We have, you know, competition. We love it. We love it. But he mentioned in his thing that in his first podcast that when the injury happened, the first thing he thought as it was happening was get rid of the ball as fast as you can so it's not a grade two tear.
Interesting.
Can you believe that's going through his head that quickly? Like, he knows something's wrong and he's like, got to get rid of it fast.
That's interesting. Yeah. I haven't listened to it, so like you telling me this right here, right now is.
I saw on Twitter news. Somebody talking about it. I think it was Dubs.
Oh, okay.
Shout out to Dubs.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet. So.
No, I haven't either.
But
congratulations on the podcast.
Sure. In the grand scheme, yes. Like everything, like all the other negative storylines we're going to talk about the season so far. It all leads back to this.
Yeah.
Right? Like the bullpen, everything. It all leads
trickle
back.
Down.
It all leads back to this. And we can sit here and say that the Cubs should have signed another starter or something like that. At this point, you can criticize. I think you can fairly criticize, you know, bringing Hendricks back instead of signing someone else, because he could use that money for someone maybe younger, someone who might get more swing and miss when your rotation is full of a lot of guys who pitch to contact. Those things are all fair to say. That's fine. I'm not saying that I disagree with it, but I am saying that it's fair to say that. However, no one thought that the steel injury was going to happen on the first day of the year.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate. And like I said, it is the worst possible scenario to start the year. The only good news out of it is it's not a season ending injury. It's the only good news about it.
Yeah. Well, it sucked. I think it sucked even more because, like, people, like, he had gotten hit in the knee, like, mm-hmm. his last spring training start.
Yeah, spring training, and he came out.
And, like, it came out, and, like, everyone freaked out, and then all of a sudden you get the good news that he's going to be okay and ready for opening day.
He tweeted it himself, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it was, like, a quick sigh of relief for Cubs fans, and then, like, 6 days later, whatever it was, 5-6 days later, he comes out of the game, and now he's not pitching for a month. Yeah, no, it is the biggest storyline right now because as much as the Cubs tout the pitching depth and have faith in their pitching depth, they don't have a Justin Steele right now. Mm-mm. They don't. They may have guys that could fill in the back end of the rotation, in the bullpen, whatever, but they don't have a guy that is filling in that ace of the staff role, that number one starter, that guy that Justin Steele became last year, where basically every time he went to the mound, you felt pretty confident in the Cubs getting a win that day, or at the very least having a chance to win the game that day. So you lose him, you lose that, and you don't really have anyone. You don't have anyone that's able to replace him that's ready to go in the major leagues right now. Like, maybe, you know, Cade Horton gets there someday, right? But that's still a whiles away. So, it is like the number one story, just because, like, you lost your best pitcher to start the season. They're 12 games in, but you're looking at another. You know, you're looking at least the end of the month, if not more than that.
But I think, you know, while Steele is certainly storyline number one, I think the guys that have helped to try and fill that void are also one of the 12 biggest storylines. While they don't have a Steele, Ben Brown, Jordan Wicks, and Javier Assad have all done a good job. Have they all had a moment where you were a little worried about them? I think Wicks the least of the three. Obviously, Ben Brown's first appearance didn't go great, but it's been good since then. And Assad was probably left in the game too long in his last outing. But all three guys have looked really, really good. So talking to that depth, I think those three players and the way they have pitched after the Steele injury have also been a top 12 storyline for the Cubs so far this season.
Well, it's a great development because the narrative around this organization for years has been that they couldn't develop their own pitching, and you just brought up three names, and hell, we brought up four names because Steele is a homegrown guy too. So, you know, like it's big that those guys have stepped up in this scenario, specifically Jordan Wicks and Javier Assad. Like, Ben Brown was a guy that I didn't expect to see on day three of the season because unless there was an injury, and unfortunately he's here because of an injury. However, he's pitched well enough to where we said the other night, if he keeps pitching like this, he's gonna stay up here. There's no way that they can send him back. I think that he could be, not necessarily the same as Assad, but like I think he could be really good in the bullpen. I think he could be very solid in your rotation some as well, which is a lot of how I feel about Javier Assad. But Jordan Wicks, as a starter at least, he's the one who's impressed me the most. Got to find a way to get him to go a little bit deeper in the games. But how he handled that Dodgers lineup on Saturday, that Dodgers lineup was impressive, mighty impressive. And I'm super optimistic about him. And again, I think the big thing is the fact that the Cubs are developing their own arms. And like in this day and age, you need to be able to do that. It's like the people who complain about not spending enough money. It's like, okay, well, then the Cubs could have went and spent money on another Jameson Taillon type, and you don't know what you're going to – like, you think you know what you're going to get, but, you know, as we've seen with Taillon, he's been a roller coaster. At least with Jordan Wicks, you developed him yourself, and you got him for a handful of years, and he hasn't even came close to a ceiling yet, you know? So, like, there's a lot more upside there and more – reason to believe that he can develop into a really solid starter into this organization. And while Tyone, while we're still waiting, like he's still a question when he comes back, considering what we saw last year. Like, are we going to get first half Tyone, or are we going to get second half Tyone? Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we didn't put Tyone. Spoiler alert: Tyone is not one of the 12 storylines.
But yeah, are we still talking about Justin Steele?
It could have been. It could have been Steele and Tyone. Really, it could have been. Yeah. You could almost connect the two.
Yeah, well, because Tyone's injury going into the season is already led to,
it was
to
a storyline before the season even started.
It already led to, like, okay, what is this pitching staff going to do? And then Steele, obviously, to a larger extent, but contributed to it too.
But it is obviously a factor. Again, these will be in no particular order. We do have a super chat, do we not, Steven?
From Fernando. Yep.
Fernando says, Ryan so unloaded on the professor yesterday, but softballs all other criticism for other players. I'm saying it.
Did I unload on the professor?
I mean, I didn't think so. We were accused of being soft on the professor.
Yeah, yesterday yesterday.
Fernando tends to come at me every once in a while. I don't think Fernando likes me very much.
Fernando gets like a crazy bull every once in a while.
He's come at me.
Well, someone did say that we were sucking up to Kyle Hendricks too much last night. So, I don't really know.
Somebody said last night we were sucking up to Hendricks. You're right.
Yeah. As a man of integrity, I have to disagree with you on this one, Fernando. I would say all three of us were pretty fair. Like, he wasn't good, but we believe that he can be better because he is who he is.
But for a $5 super chat, say whatever you want.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah, tell me.
Welcome that, always.
Tell me, say whatever you want about us. I don't know.
I got some ideas behind the computer over here.
Oh, right. Easy, Steven.
What do I get for $10?
Okay, so these are no particular order. So far, we've got Steele's injury and then sort of the emergence or performance of Ben Brown, Jordan Wicks, and Javier Assad. Mm-hmm. I think another one, maybe a little more quiet than some of the other 12 that we will reveal, Nico's slow start's kind of been under the radar a little bit, right? And for me personally, it's because I think some of it's been bad luck, right? But it does seem like he's got a slightly different... Is it a different approach? Is it a different approach at the plate? Is he trying to get a little more power?
I'll let Ryan answer that one first.
I don't know. Something looks slightly... I'm not worried about it at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying something looks slightly... Something's different.
Yeah, for Nico, right?
For Nico.
It's... I remember when we had talked to him in the beginning of spring training, it was like he did talk about like knowing that he needed to add a little bit of power to his game. And that's something that, like, you know, I talked about that. I think we all talked about at some point this offseason that, like, he's a good hitter, but he's still putting up, like, closer to league average. Like, if you're looking at WRC plus, right, he's closer to league average than you want him to be, right?
102 last year, which is basically league average.
Yeah, and part of that is that he just doesn't generate a lot of power with the bat, and obviously he wasn't walking a lot. So there are different things that go into it, but it definitely is part of where if – the balance of he talked about wanting to add more power to his game, but he does have to be, like, in a way conscious of, he can't mm-hmm. change who Nico Horner is and can't sacrifice a ton from one side to try to make improvements on the other side. Like, so it's a tough balance, right? It's easier said than done. He's striking out at an 87th percentile right now. His walk rate actually is really high. So that's another positive change from him. But yeah, he's not hitting the ball very hard. His hard hit rate, 28th percentile, barrel rate, first percentile. Like, expected slugging, like a lot of blue in some of those contact quality stats. So I do think that's part of it, is the fact that he is trying to, or he has talked about trying to get more power into his game, which a lot of guys talk about anyway. Like, I think the average baseball player will say that at like every other spring training, talking about wanting to add power to their game, more power to their game.
And being in the best shape of their lives.
Yeah, right. But like for Nico, it made sense to want to try to tap into some of that, considering it just wasn't a huge part of his game previously. I don't know. And through 12 games, he's not hitting very well. What's his, like, hitting like 167 or something like that?
139.
Whatever it is. He got the day off the last Padres game, obviously. But just had him in hitting very well. Again, I mentioned the walk rate, which is maybe the best part about his game so far, is that it's higher than it's ever been. Yep. But everything else seems like it's going in the wrong direction. So while not being worried about it, it is something that you're going to have to monitor. It's like, okay, is what he was Nico was doing as far as wanting to add power. Is that taken away from his other game? Is this just like a slow start to the season? Where like, I think it's more like a where does he go from here?
Right.
We've said we're not worried about Nico. I'm not worried about Nico. I do believe he's a good enough hitter to figure it out. But it is worth monitoring because now we are 12 games into the year and he hasn't really found it yet. And now you're sitting here like, okay, where are they going to get Nico Horner? Like, when are they going to start seeing Nico Horner at the plate again?
I will say I'd be a little bit more worried if, like, he was striking out more, because you're talking about he's trying to get more power, right? He's trying to show more power, trying to slug more. And usually when guys do that and it doesn't go well, they strike out more. Well, his K rate's at 12.8%. Last year, he struck out at a 12.1% rate. So he's not striking out it's not like it's drastically more. It's not like it's up to 20% or anything like that. He had one of the highest contact rates in all of baseball last year. I think it's been a combination of bad luck. He had a couple hard hit balls.
He does have a 167 BABIP right now.
Yeah, it's
really tough.
And I Googled this last night, but the league average BABIP is like 300. So, yeah. Credit to me. Yeah. Anyway.
You could just ask me.
Like, I could have, but I wanted to go and look it up myself.
3 o'clock in the morning. He was.
All right.
Guy doesn't sleep.
Listen, I've been living on Baseball Savant in 2024. People wouldn't believe that, all right?
I know. Having started your own Delmetrics, to actually go somewhere else for information seems odd.
I'm trying to provide more for the people, all right?
I understand.
Anyway. So the K rate's still about where it's been for most of his career. His BABIP is not at anywhere close to the league average. And
you expect that to rise.
And he's been, and I expect that to rise. And he's been hitting the ball hard recently, especially in that series against the Padres. And I thought he even did so against the Dodgers as well. So the hits will come. And I think it's great that the walk rate is there. And if as long, I don't expect it to stay at 17%. Yeah. But I love seeing him work at bats, get on base. And unfortunately, I think the stolen bases just aren't going to get back to where we saw last year, just because of the role that he's in this year. And the thing is like no one for the Cubs is stealing bases. So and I don't two, know if I, it, I don't know. Year? I don't know if it's like a, if it's like a team, like a,
or a game adjustment.
No, I don't know if it's like a Craig Counsell thing versus David Ross thing. Like how much are they trying to steal? You know, I don't know, you know, so.
They need to make the bases bigger.
we'll see how it works. I would like them to steal more bases because they were so successful at it last year, but they've been getting a lot more hits. They've been driving in runs. They've been scoring a lot. So it hasn't affected them at all. The fact that they haven't done it, but you know, yeah. So that's my two cents on Nico. If these numbers are anything like this, come mid May, I'll start to get worried. But he's earned the right to have some leeway.
Those are our first three of 12 big storylines, 12 games into the season. Also, very important, 12 games into the season is, if you don't know about it, pay attention, Prize Picks. Prize Picks is something you got to pay attention to. If you didn't know about it before the season started, 12 games into the season, there's no excuse now because Cody's going to tell you about it.
Yeah, Prize Picks, it's the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. The easiest and most exciting way to play DFS is just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you can pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Spring training is over and baseball season is officially underway. Don't miss your chance to add your favorite players from the diamond in your Prize Pick entry, whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs. Take your pick of more or less and add them to your Prize Picks entry today. Yesterday, I had Michael Bush, Seiya Suzuki, and Ian Happ in my Prize Picks entry, and I did not win because no one hit except for Michael Bush. But there's, you know, the good news is there is always tomorrow, as in today. So, you know, the Cubs are off today. I'm just thinking about doing a Prize Picks entry related to the Pirates and whoever they're playing tonight. I can't remember. Interesting. But like, there's like 2 games tonight. So I was like,
you got to stay busy.
I got to find something to bet on. What else am I going to do? So you too can be just like me and make your entries at prizepicks.com/CHGO when you use code CHGO for the first deposit matchup to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Yeah, and, you know, you do the prize picks. Obviously, you can do that and watch games from the the comfort of your own home. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to be in the comfort of your own home, you want to go to a game, you should...
You want to be in the action.
You need to check out Game Time. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch, with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee. Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. So, yeah, you can get baseball tickets, obviously. You know, if you want to go to the Bulls playing game, I believe they're hosting, right? Mm-hmm. You can go on Game Time.
Yeah, Jerry's going
to
get some money.
Something better, going to see the Red Stars at Wrigley.
Sure.
That's better than going to the Bulls
playing. Now you're talking about something worth seeing.
Yeah.
I went to a concert.
Well, anytime you can see a guy try to alley-oop to himself and miss it, that's... That's worth seeing sometimes, too.
Def Leppard and Journey playing at Wrigley in July. I'm going to that. Excited about that. That's all better than going to see the Bulls in the playing game.
I went to a concert at a venue called Radius a few weeks ago with some of my cousins, and that was a good time, and bought the tickets on Game Time. I'm actually looking at Game Time right now. Thursday the 18th, Marlins at Cubs. Tickets as low as $4. That's a great deal, and you can't find that anywhere else.
What about
else?
Friday for Friday Steven's 120 Club?
Right now trying to get some.
Oh, yeah, and Friday 120 Club, right now, tickets as low as $2.
You could come to Friday 120 Club for, well, I don't know if those are bleacher seats, but if the cheapest ticket is $2, I'm saying
get after it.
Maybe pay attention to it, get it later.
Might as well just skip work for the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think one of the things I really love about Game Time is the view from your spot, like the view from the seat that they have there. And it's like, you know, you go on maybe some other ticketing apps and they don't have the views of the seat. You don't get to see exactly what your view is going to be. But you go on Game Time, you look, and it shows you exactly where your seat is in the venue, and you could go and look at it. So, like, our friend Susie of DMVR Rockies fame talked about one time her going to Wrigley Field and getting stuck right behind one of the posts,
right
in the or underneath, you know, behind home plate or whatever. And I wish she would have checked out Game Time. She would have been able to see that,
know
exactly where she was at. But yeah, so Game Time, last minute tickets, flash deals, zone deals. It's easy to find and buy MLB tickets for every kind of event in your area. View from all seats in the venue and the lowest price guaranteed. Event cancellation protection, job loss protection. All that good stuff. Game Time has last minute deals. Save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, etc. Save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select states ahead of the game or event with flash deals. And with zone deals, save even more when you choose a section and let Game Time choose the seats. It's got all-in pricing. Toggling this feature shows the total upfront with no surprise fees at checkout. Again, I mentioned the seat views. You get your panoramic view from your seat in the app before you buy. And it's also got the lowest price guarantee, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Game Time also provides ticket coverage. Your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. For a limited time, all users can get $20 off any MLB purchase of $150 or more in the Game Time app with code FIRSTPITCH. Terms apply. That's code FIRSTPITCH. For $20 off from March 25th to April 14th only. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
We've got a super chat. Another one from Fernando saying, considering injuries, is 500 good for April, good or bad? I've said if they can be over 500 or at 500 when Steele comes back, that will be a successful start to the season. That's just how I feel about it. Yeah. Somebody else was saying they want more at bats for Mike Tauchman, who's been Mr. Walkman.
Mr. Walkman.
But he's
Walkman.
Also part of number four, a fourth of our 12 big storylines, mm-hmm. and that has been very clear. The Cubs' offense has been working pitchers. Opposing pitchers are getting worked because the Cubs have been very, very patient, and that is something Craig Counsell really tried to drive home. Be patient at the plate, swing at strikes.
Yeah.
I even thought yesterday that they were pretty patient. They just couldn't get the big hit. They had Dylan Cease on the ropes in a few innings, and they just couldn't get the big hit. Michael Busch was the only one who did with the homer. Morel hit one really hard off him, unfortunately, that was caught for an out. And then he hit another ball really hard, but right at Kim. his second at bat. So like, you need the results, and you know they scored two runs yesterday. It was off a home run, so it didn't show up. But I'm just stating that even in these games that they've lost, or even yesterday when you lose 10-2, I feel like the at bats have been great. And I think they really showed the patient offense stuff against Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove. Mm-hmm. Though Yu Darvish, you know, he was out of the game in what, before the third inning?
I think after three, maybe.
Yeah, like I think a lot of it was his own doing because he was just missing really bad. But the Cubs, not only did they walk plenty, but they got hits to you know get that eight run lead that they eventually blew. And then Joe Musgrove, he was a lot better the next day, but he still didn't. I don't even think he got to the sixth because the Cubs forced him to throw way too many pitches, and like that's the thing that they've been doing is working counts, getting the starting pitcher out of the game pretty early. I think the only day that I feel like the offense has looked really bad was probably against Yamamoto last Saturday.
Yeah. No, the offense has been, I mean, you could see it. You could see it in the amount of pitches they're taking. I think it was it the Musgrove game where I think from the Cubs account was tweeted that he was at like 48 pitches or whatever through two innings, and I look and it was like there was not 9 plate appearances in the first two innings, and 7 of them saw at least 6 pitches in the plate appearance, which like right now they're going into today, the Cubs have seen the 10th most pitches per plate appearance. And like in small samples like this, the number is very minuscule. So like they're at 3.97. The first place team is 4.18. League average is 3.90. So it's like it doesn't seem that big. But when you're talking about every plate appearance that goes into a game, every plate appearance that goes into a month of games, all that stuff, like that's, you'll start to see, to understand the why that kind of stuff is important. So you see it though. And then they're still second in walk rate. I think the Yankees have just passed them up, but they're still second in walk rate. So they're willing not only to work big counts, they're willing to take the walks. A lot of the guys aren't chasing bad pitches often, which we've seen from Cubs teams in the past. It just seems like especially with guys like Christopher Morel. Like I think he had a couple bad chases yesterday against the Padres, but overall his chase just hasn't been as clearly like bad as it was the last couple seasons, or you know, just as far as like you see him reeling in the willingness to chase at bad pitches, to swing at bad pitches. So overall I think you see the team really being patient in their approach, willing to build at bats, build plate appearances, and take their walks. And I'm going to keep saying it, for a team that just doesn't have a lot of power, like that's a huge, hugely valuable for this team, because they need to figure out ways to manufacture runs, to string good at bats and good plate appearances and walks and hits together when they don't have consistently up and down the lineup guys that are just hicking it. You feel like can change the game with one swing.
And what you're saying plays into three of the next four big storylines that we have of the 12 storylines that we're going through in this podcast. So we've done Steele's injury, Brown, Wicks, Assad, picking up the slack. Then you got Nico's slow start, patient offense, not in any particular order, because if it were in order, I think you would probably go Steele injury and then this guy. Say has been sizzling.
Yeah.
Like he, you know, Cody said if he plays like this, what could happen? Or is that Morel?
I said that about Morel, but
you can say the same as Saya, the way he's played. I'm saying it now.
I did place a bet on Saya to win MVP.
Oh, wait a minute.
Before the season.
Really?
Yeah.
What were the odds on that?
Plus 8,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, the party we're going to have.
Yeah.
The shoes I'm going to buy.
Yeah, the shoes are
the amount of shoes.
He's going to give the shoes.
Cody's just going to call up Nike and say, give me the Jordans. Which one, sir? The Jordans.
the thing is that plus 8,000 at it was actually a lot higher. It was like plus like 15,000 or whatever.
Oh wow.
Like, and then he had that hot spring and the odds started coming down. People started placing their bets. So anyway, yeah.
I'm excited for the shoes you're gonna buy us.
Yeah, same. If he keeps doing this, he's gonna find himself there. And he has the defensive value, unlike Morel. So I mean, Say is just like I said this. It's like I feel like I could just say the same thing I said about Morel the other night about Saya. Like we all knew that his bat could take that next step. He just needed to be more consistent. And overall, he has been, and he ranks among the top players in the league in terms of exit velocity. He
94th percentile,
right?
Like, almost averaging a hard hit per average every time he puts the ball in play.
And yeah, I'm like, he's he's just giving you good at bats at the same time. Like yesterday wasn't great. I'll say that much, yeah. But you can't expect a guy to be perfect every single day.
It's because I picked him. It's because I picked him for who he got. I can't win.
Yeah, when I pick him, he gets three hits and he doesn't win. No, that's the way it's gone for me.
I haven't taken him because I don't need to take him. He's playing good.
That's right. We don't need to will him into anything. Now, Saya being great is not surprising. Injuries are not surprising, but another key storyline has certainly been Merriweather's injury impacting the bullpen. Right. Yeah. As Steele has impacted everything, Merriweather's injury has definitely impacted specifically the bullpen, because he was one of the guys that, if I'm Craig Counsell going into the season, I have really good confidence in.
Yeah. No, especially last year with the fact that he was able to stay healthy throughout the year. And again, for a guy that had dealt with injury and ineffectiveness previously, like he's 30, 31, something like that. Like he's not like a prospect or anything. He just couldn't stick at the major league level to establish himself the way he did as a reliever last year. Was massive for that team, especially when you're talking about like a core four group of guys that was getting used almost every day for like the second half of the year. And he was the one that as far, he was pitching all of September, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, him going down, and it's like a domino effect. You mentioned Steele and Tyone, like because those guys are hurt, now Assad is in the rotation. Ben Brown comes up, and he's, even though he's been pitching the first couple of times we're out of the bullpen, you're looking at him as like a specific day guy, mm-hmm. a length guy, a rotation guy. And so that already took away two bullpen guys you could have had that you felt like maybe you could, to Assad to a probably higher extent, like you could probably, you really felt like you could rely on him out of the bullpen. Ben Brown, maybe you just didn't know what you're going to get from him because he hadn't debuted yet, but you knew that was part of the depth. Now Merriweather goes down, you lose another bullpen arm that you were really counting on to be huge for you. Yeah, and especially at this early in the season when they're not getting a lot of length out of their starters, the bullpen guys are having to take on a lot of the workload. Like, yeah, it is a big hit to that bullpen, even if it's only one guy, because of all of the context of the entire situation. And now knowing, you know, it could be, someone said it could be 8 weeks, something like that. I think right. Taylor yeah, McGregor might have said that. So now you're looking at it as like you're losing this guy for a third of the year, potentially, who was supposed to be one of your top relief options. How do you fill that? Like, who's stepping up, right? Daniel Palencia came out, or he got called back up, and he's been pitching out of the bullpen a couple times over the weekend, and then obviously yesterday. I think it was yesterday. You got to figure out, if you're the Cubs, how can you replace what you were hoping Julian Merriweather was going to give you this year at the back end?
It's 12 games into the season, and the Cubs know that three of their key arms are going to miss minimum at least a month of the season, maybe two. They know Steele's out for a month this season. He's going to miss a month of the season. They know Tyone's basically going to miss at least a month this season.
Well, I think he should be back actually in the next week and a half.
But it's still going to be close. Still going to be pushing up to close to a month.
Well, because there's 12 games in. You're looking at 25 games or so, maybe around there. And
Merriweather's going to be beyond a month. So those are three key arms. I'll tell you what I can't live with for out a month. You know, a month? Miss it for a month? Come on. Can't miss it for a day. Some beers can say they're brewed for baseball, but only Blue Moon is brewed by baseball. Beer and baseball just go together, and no beer goes better than the one that was literally born in a ballpark. Blue Moon was created at Coors Field in Denver, Colorado. It's the natural choice for opening day, opening week, and all season long. Boy, the weather this weekend coming up, oh, it's just screaming. Give me a Blue Moon. 70 degrees on the way. Nothing beats watching baseball or lounging by the pool with an ice-cold Blue Moon and a little slice of orange on the side. Blue Moon was brewed by baseball to give you a dose of nostalgia and get you excited for a new season. A beer this good only comes around once in a blue moon, but you can enjoy it all season long. So it's not quite as rare as the Eclipse, but it's close. Bring the ballpark to you with Blue Moon Belgian-style wheat ale. It's a one-of-a-kind. Every time, get Blue Moon delivered by visiting get.bluemoonbeer.com/CHGO to see your delivery options. That's get.bluemoonbeer.com/CHGO. Blue Moon, made brighter, celebrate responsibly. Blue Moon Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And let me tell you, while you're at it, guys, I want to let you in on a little secret I know. Lucy Nicotine made for your nicotine routine and delivered straight to your door. 100% pure nicotine, always tobacco free. Choose your form, whether it's pouches, breakers, or gum. You also can choose your strength, 2 milligrams all the way up to 12 milligrams. 2 milligrams, that's suitable for somebody who uses nicotine infrequently. 4 to 8 milligrams, likely to satisfy you if you have an everyday nicotine routine. And 12 milligrams might be for you if you've been underwhelmed by the effects of your other nicotine pouches. Choose your flavor too. Mint, apple ice, espresso, mango, and more. Save yourself from the weekly gas station stop and sign up for a monthly subscription. Save 15% too. No commitment. Cancel anytime. Lucy Breakers, nicotine pouches with a tiny capsule inside. The capsule contains liquid flavor that saturates the pouch before it's even in use. Maybe your choice is midday slump, right? Or maybe you like that nicotine at the golf course or after your coffee. How's this for a customer review? Quote, best nicotine pouches I've found. Feel and taste great. Couldn't be happier with my monthly subscription. End quote. Let's level up your nicotine routine with Lucy. Go to lucy.co/CHGO Cubs to get 20% off your first order. Lucy offers free shipping and has a 30-day refund policy if you change your mind. That's lucy.co and use the code CHGO Cubs to get 20% off and always free shipping. Now, and here's the fine print. Pay attention. It's only for adults of legal age, and every order is age verified. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Cubs baseball also addictive.
We have a super chat.
Okay.
Do we have a super chat?
No, we don't.
Did the another one from Fernando?
Yeah, that was from Fernando.
Did I miss that? I was talking about it.
I think we talked
about April.
We talked about it.
Yeah, we.
Okay, I just completely missed it.
Which show are you on?
I was just scrolling through the comments. I'm like, hey, wait, I didn't.
I
think I was looking up the pitches per plate.
We need to get you a little Lucy nicotine.
I just want to, related to the Merriweather thing, the only positive I can spin out of it is that it's now opening an opportunity for a young guy. And at the end of the day, as much as like again, my expectations for this year are to make the playoffs for sure. But I think that this team can make the playoffs with some of the young arms that they have, that they're high on and that they're optimistic on. Obviously, they have to perform.
Yeah.
But they haven't proved anything and all this and that. But I've been asking for 2 years for answers on guys. And again, I'd rather these injuries not happen, of course. But if Steele's injury doesn't happen, we aren't getting a taste of Ben Brown yet, right? And I wish that injury didn't happen because he's our best pitcher. But like, this is kind of the point that I'm trying to make, though.
The silver
lining to it, to Merriweather's injury, is now that we're going to see someone that the Cubs want to get an answer for or get a look at, you know what I mean? And once Steele and especially Tyone will be back next week, most likely, like next weekend, like once he comes back, then perhaps you can put the ass man or Brown back into the bullpen, and then you can see them in that role too. And like, again, you're answering some questions here early in the season. I know people are going to spin what I just said something really fucking stupid. But
whoa, potty kids
mouth.
Are awake.
Potty mouth. I don't kids care. Are awake.
It's not late night on West Coast. But
again, though, I would just like some answers on some dudes. So like, that's the only silver lining. Of course, I wish that Merriweather and Steele were healthy, but we also need to learn about some of these young guys too. So I'm kind of intrigued, at least, about some of it.
Speaking of learning about somebody, there's two ways we are learning about Christopher Morel. So he takes two of the top 12 storylines 12 games into the season. One is, what are we getting with Morel's defense? And then the next one has been Morel at the plate, which has been spectacular. So one's been a little questionable and more question marks. The other has shown the type of improvement that we're looking for defensively. Offensively, he's been chasing less, something we weren't sure he could do. But so far, small sample size, he's done it and he's been great. Now we want to see the other storyline see that same type of improvement, even if it's just for small portions. And I feel like, I know you don't want to live game to game necessarily with it, and that's not how council wants to do it, but you have seen Morel make a couple of nice plays recently, specifically with tags. more so than fielding and throwing to first. The routine plays scare me more than him having to make a quick tag somewhere.
That's what it seems like. I mean, it seems like when it's a routine play, he has time to think about it, whatever. I'm not saying for sure, but like it feels like the ones where he just goes and doesn't have to think about it. He just goes on instinct and makes the play. It feels like that, like those are, I honestly feel like you're just a little more confident in that. Like that was a play he made. Was it game one against the Padres? Tatis, I think, had a chopper over to third. He barehanded it, fired over, perfect throw. And he has made some other like routine plays, which I'm not praising the guy for making routine plays. If you're going to be a major league third baseman, you have to be able to make routine plays. But to see him make a few more lately, it is a good sign. But what I'm trying to say overall is just like defensively, he has to get to a point where, we have to get to a point where you don't see a ball get hit to him that should be a routine play, and you start to tense up a little bit, or you start to think like, oh no, it's gonna be another error. He has 3 errors already on the year in 12 games. It's obviously not that's not good, and different types of errors too. We know he has the athleticism and like obviously the arm strength and that stuff to be a good third baseman. I think a lot of it has to do with the little things. The way you set your feet, the way you move, all that little stuff that doesn't come up as errors all the time. And it's something that I've said previously, is just doing the little things right to get you to a point where those routine plays are routine for you. Then that's what morale is to get to. Another thing where it's just going to be a wait and see. It's going to be a little bit of a up and down just because that's where you're at with him right now. But it's going to be a wait and see, and the Cubs are going to continue to give him run there. But like I am intrigued to see where it goes, because I do think you've started to see a little bit more of consistency with the routine plays. Not enough where you're like completely confident in it, but maybe a little bit more consistency there with those routine
now, plays. Has he ever hit you with a throw in the press box? Barb, the godmother, saying that an errant Morel throw almost hit you in the press box. Yeah. It seems almost impossible since it's classic. Behind home plate.
That's her version of don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
No, I'm trying to think of the physics for it, and it has to be a really strong
wind.
I don't think John Lester could even do that.
No. Now, one of my golf tee shots could do it, because a hard slice right.
Yeah. Have we bitched about Morel's defense this week?
Not really.
We haven't.
Not really.
Point blank. That's all I needed to say.
That's all Cody had to say. And the Godfather basically was saying, hey, we shouldn't give credit to a guy for making a tag, but these were specifically nice tags. They weren't Javi Baez tags, but they weren't routine plays to get the tag down.
And it's also just making a more difficult play look pretty easy.
Yes,
I think that's like the most praise you give it, is like he made it look easy. He made it look like it's an easy play, which it's not. We know that. Anyone that's played baseball knows that wasn't like an easy play. It's not the most difficult play in the world, but it's not an easy play, and he made it look easy. So, like, it's, again, just another word was, like, it is a good sign out of him that he's able to make plays like that right now.
I thought it was telling of how the Cubs are feeling about him going forward at third base, knowing that they put him at third base yesterday with Kyle Hendricks on the mound. I was almost certain that they were going to play Madrigal at third with Kyle Hendricks on the mound, and they didn't. Instead, they played Mastroboni at second. But again, like to me, yesterday was the best time for them to play Madrigal at third, if they wanted an upgrade at defense, and they didn't, and he didn't. He's not the reason they lost.
No, he's
again. We haven't bitched about his defense this week. Well, give the guy some credit. Thank you.
We couldn't. All right. People couldn't complain about Morel's defense this week, but they could complain about a bullpen blowing an 8-0 lead.
That's fair.
More than halfway through the game.
I actually enjoy reading the comments of everyone bitching about Jose Quas more than Christopher Morel's defense.
Well, I knew that credit name. To you guys. I knew that name was going to come up, but obviously one of the top 12 storylines, 12 games into the season, has been, is Alzolay the closer, and just bullpen blues in general. Like Alzolay's been inconsistent, but that's just a smaller piece of the bullpen blues. Again, I think a lot of it can be solved by three guys getting healthy.
Right.
Well, just like you said, because some of those starters, Ben Brown might look really, really good in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
We know Assad looks good in the bullpen. And so some of these other arms coming back, and if and when Merriweather gets healthy, or if and when another guy gets the next chance. Maybe it is Keegan Thompson coming back and getting another shot at some point early in the season. I don't know. He has had a pretty good start so far in Iowa.
I just, you know, when specifically with Ben Brown, it's also like how many innings are the Cubs wanting him to pitch this year, right? Like, I don't know how many innings he pitched last year off the top of my head, but like he did get hurt at the end of last year. You know what I mean? He's also a two-pitch pitcher, which I know Justin Steele is the outlier, but most starters have more than two pitches, you know? And so, like, to me, he makes a lot of sense in the bullpen with the high velocity that he has and just the overall, like, the rest of the stuff he has shown us shows that he can get strikeouts, something that the bullpen needs, you know what I mean? So, to me, the bullpen would be, we'd probably be pretty high on the bullpen if one of Assad or Brown were in the bullpen mm-hmm. right now. You know what I mean? Like, the best arm right now, for sure, that we probably all feel really good about is Leiter and Drew Smyly. Mm-hmm.
Can Ben Brown become Merriweather this season?
He certainly could.
I think he absolutely could.
I also am optimistic about him being a starter one day. Me too. But the only reason he's in the rotation right now is because of an injury. And he's excelled in it so far. And once he gets stretched out, maybe he takes off. And if he does, then you leave him there, because if it ain't broke, don't change anything, right? However, I'm just saying that, like, I think he can be used in both roles similarly as Javier Assad has.
I think he's shown he deserves, so far, he's shown he deserves to be here, one role or the other.
Right.
And that's also a nice way to break a guy into the major leagues is some bullpen work. Yeah. It's worked before for the Cubs. Steel. It's worked before for other teams.
Corbin Burns. I think Brandon Woodruff, if I'm not mistaken, was also worked in as a reliever when he first came up. So, like, you just look up an hour north and a couple of examples of guys that were really good starters that came in as relievers.
I really do think, I wish I knew, like, the amount of innings that the Cubs want some of these young guys to pitch this year. Like we know Cade Horton is probably on a pitch or on an innings limit.
I think he just made his first outing yesterday, right?
Like,
am I mistaken?
Like, for people who have asked us about Cade Horton, like, when do we think he's going to be here? You know, like, I think it's all based off how many innings they want him to pitch this year.
Do we want to make our statement? Do we want to put our date down? You know, we're not giving away sources, but do we want to put our date down, Cade Horton? Do we want to say the date? We think, we've heard from sources. Do we want to say that? Or do we not want to go on record? I think we should put it out there because if it's right, if we're right,
then credit to
it'll
us.
Be just like when I said Cody Bellinger would be signing on the 24th in the 24th hour. Actually,
Gary,
of the 24th
Gary
year.
Said it before you.
Oh, Gary and I.
It'd be like when you said the Cubs are going to win 83 games.
Which also happened.
Go ahead.
You don't want to say it?
No, we can. June 1st.
We've heard from a source.
Put on the record.
We've heard from a source.
A source of a source. Maybe June 1st.
Maybe
they might be targeting June 1st. Now that seems early to me.
Oh, so maybe it's not even.
I'm not saying maybe. I'm just saying I'm putting it out there in the universe.
Okay.
Something we've heard. Have we heard it? Have we all heard that?
I have.
See, Ryan doesn't want to go there, but I don't care. I'll say it. I heard June 1st.
Not from my own sources.
No,
whatever.
From your source of a source, we heard June 1st.
From your source.
When the source of the source is right, credit to us because we put it out.
That's right.
The
and if it's wrong, then we just say, well, the source was wrong. The source of the source was wrong.
And don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
But we have heard the date, June 1st, being a target date.
Which makes sense in all honesty anyway.
Anyways, speaking of guys being called up, a lot of people have been clamoring for Owen Casey to be called up. And that's another storyline. He's been great at Iowa. Yeah. I don't know if that means he's coming up any faster because your three outfielders seem to be set in place and your fourth outfielder seems to be set in place. But maybe a DH role isn't set in place for some guys. And you just never know how injuries are going to impact a team throughout a season. We didn't know Steele was going to be down at this point, so we didn't think Ben Brown would be here this early. Right. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that Owen Casey is raking at Iowa so far this season.
Yeah, what do we got? He's hitting .324 with a .903 OPS.
And listen, right now, if they wanted to call him up, how would you even play him?
Right, unless you have something that impacts it from the outside, right? Like I said, you didn't expect Steele to be down. Now Brown's here. Something happens to somebody else, good to know that Owen Casey's off to a good start in Iowa and had a great spring, too.
He had a great spring. has looked really good in Iowa. I mean, the strikeouts are still really high, and I think that's like he's still like I'm looking at his Fangraphs page right now. He still has a 35.6% strikeout rate, which is high. But like
Morelli's got a lot of power.
He is walking
that comes with power hitters. Yeah, a lot of times
he is walking at a 15.6% clip. So like. He does feel like a lot more of like one of the three true outcome kind of guys because his exit velocities are so high. But I do know that that's having talked to him during spring training, like that's definitely something that he's trying to work on is cutting down the strikeout rate. Easier said than done. But yeah, he's I don't know that he fits in this team right now just because of where they're at. Like injuries happen and guys have to be called upon that maybe didn't expect it right away. Like I'm sure Ben Brown didn't expect to be on the roster two games or three games into the year, whatever it was, right?
There he is, thriving.
So, like, guys may have to get called upon. And, like, if Owen Casey continues to do what he's doing, like, you could totally see a scenario where he's pretty much knocking down the door to get up to the big leagues and the Cubs have to bring him up because they need that kind of bat in the lineup. It's just as far as the fit. Like, right now it doesn't look like there's a fit because – the corner outfield spots are taken because like he's just not a first base prospect. And I know he was getting some work there during spring, but he's not like a first base prospect. And the DH, I do think the Cubs value that flexibility they can have with that to give a guy like don't have to put him in the field, but can keep his bat in the lineup kind of stuff. Or when your full lineup's out there, you can play around with who goes into that DH spot, right? The Cubs, I do think value that, but like if Owen Casey breaks down the door and gets called up to the big leagues, there's a spot for him right there as a DH if he's hitting that well.
I agree. Now, Barb's saying send Bush down. Now, Bush is not one of our 12 storylines, although he very well could have been. He's been off to a good start, Barb. Come on now, Barb.
Barb.
I don't know.
She said
it's going to take all season to make Barb a Bush fan. She's going to love Bush by the end of the season.
Right. She said something earlier in
the chat.
Corey
was the first one.
She said something earlier in the chat that Jed may be known for the worst trade in MLB history by the end of it.
Well, we're just going to have to wait and see how that all plays out.
It's played out pretty well so far.
We are counting our 12 top Cubs storylines 12 games into the season. We know it's a small sample size. It's an off day. We like to have fun. 12 storylines 12 games into the season. Now, Owen Casey's the only guy that we made a storyline that's hasn't made an appearance on the major league team. That's just a franchise. Hey, pay attention down there. There are other guys doing that well. On the major league level, Hap leading off has been a huge success 12 games into the season. Something I think, credit to us, we all called for many times last season.
Yeah, no, just because of the profile of hitter he is, he's become a guy that is really patient at really patient at the plate. And actually, I didn't get a chance to read the full thing before we hopped on, but Maddie Lee over at the Sun-Times had a story, and it starts off, it's talking about, like, training vision and, like, seeing the ball at the plate, like, just because this is just having 20/20 vision isn't enough
right
for baseball players, whether it's contacts or regular eyesight. And, like, apparently Dustin Kelly told Maddie Lee that Hap is, like, for whatever exercises and trainings they have for that, Ian is probably the most diligent one
with training
that
eyes.
With that routine, whatever they have of like, I guess, Hap, I don't want to give too much of her story away, but like juggles and does all these different kind of like vision.
That can help your vision? I had no idea.
But I think it's just like
I'm a 2010 guy, by the way, despite the fact that I have readers. I am 2010 and I never hit a curveball in my life. Yeah,
but I know, but I don't think it's I don't think so much like vision, like a prescription.
Right.
The ability
to brain.
The ability
back to
see things faster, to see things however that works. Like I'm no scientist.
Reaction time.
I never claimed to be a scientist, so I don't know exactly how all that stuff works. But
probably good at video games.
So back to what I was talking about. Ian is showing a very clear willingness to not swing so early in the count, to work counts, to make guys throw pitches to him. And I think especially because he's leading off as a lefty versus I think Nico was leading off for the most part as against lefties. Yeah. Ian has led off most of these games and I think he's done a really good job. The on base percentage is there for him. The walk rate's still there. And that's, when
it's
we
the
talked
90th
about
percentile walk rate.
Yeah. So when we talked about like last year, it maybe just didn't fit in the three hole. And we all said it, like he may be better suited to be as a leadoff hitter because of the profile of the hitter that he is. And yeah, you're seeing it right now based on that, based on his willingness to set the table for the rest of his teammates, just find a way to get on base. What is it, a 12-game on base streak now?
Yeah, he's been on base every single game.
It's pretty good for a leadoff man.
So it's when you're putting a guy in a leadoff spot and asking him to get on base for the guys behind him, Ian's been doing a pretty good job of that.
His whiff rate is above league average. His chase rate is above league average. His, like I just said, his walk rate is 96th percentile. Yeah, on top of the fact that hitting-wise, he is off to a good start. And I know the last couple games have not been there, but he's still found a way to get on base. And when you're hitting leadoff, that's all that matters is just getting on base. He had an at-bat against, maybe it was the Rockies, but he had a go-ahead walk with the bases loaded. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times have we seen other guys, let the moment get too big for them and they, strike out on three or four pitches instead? You know, Ian Happ, it doesn't matter what the scenario is, it feels like he's going to give you a good at-bat every single time. Yeah. So
right now he's 20th in on-base percentage in the big leagues.
Just wish they'd let him bat third once just to see how he does there. I'm kidding. And by the way, I don't know if this is fact, but I thought I heard that he didn't really want to be the leadoff guy, but Craig Counsell was like, listen, you've got everything we need to be our leadoff guy. I need you to be the leadoff guy. Yeah. And he's embraced it, just like Nico embraced moving over to second base. So if true, that is something that's pretty impressive about Ian Happ as
20th
well.
20th in baseball, on-base percentage, 10th in walk rate at 17.5%. So that's, when we talk about a guy you want at the top of your order, like that, yes, that is a guy that's
good start,
willing to get, or trying to get on base however possible.
He's going to find himself in the All-Star game again if he keeps this up. If the Cubs are winning the division, going like
136 WRC plus right now,
going through the end of May, and he's in ranking this high and walk rate and just on base and all these stuff, mm-hmm, on top of the hitting that he's done so far, he's going to find himself in the All-Star game again.
Couple minutes left. We have one storyline left, and I'm not sure which way it's going to go based on last night's podcast. We have Steele's injury. We have Brownwick's Assad stepping up. We have Nico's slow start offensively. We have the Cubs being patient on offense. We have Seiya's been sizzling at the plate. We have Merriweather's injury in the bullpen. We have Morel's defense. We have Morel's offense. We have the bullpen blues. Owen Casey started AAA, and we have Happ leading off in the 12th one, 12 games into the season. Craig Counsell's impact. Bang for the buck. What have you seen? What do you like? What do you don't like? Or is it just too early? I think you've seen an impact, and to me, the biggest example of that is the patience. I know we heard about the bullpen use. He can't control that three of his top pitchers are down right now, and it's impacted the entire pitching staff.
Right.
I will judge him on how he's using these relievers when he actually has the right relievers in the right spots. Hasn't happened yet.
I think I'll list off the good things. I love the lineup construction.
Okay.
We clamored for Ian Happ to be leading off last year, or at least top one or two in the lineup, right? We begged for Cody Bellinger to be hitting third. That way he gets more at bats, right? Last year. So far this year, Ian Happ has been leading off against righties, and Cody Bellinger has consistently been hitting third in the lineup. I like the lineup construction. I like the philosophy on the lineup construction. It's exactly what this team needed. I like that he gets the guys to respond, because after blowing an 8-0 lead and losing 9-8, they came back and won 5-1 the next day. And I think that's telling of the manager. Not like, obviously the guys have to go out there and perform, but a team could have really, gone on a downstretch after a game like that, So I like the bounce back after that.
Agreed.
The only thing that I don't like so far, and again, you bring up the point, the fact that the bullpen is taxed, and so he's trying to stretch some of these guys out. I don't like that he left Assad in on Monday, and I don't like that he left Hendricks in yesterday after the fifth inning.
I'm with you on the Assad one. Yeah. I'm not sure about Hendricks.
I'm against you guys on the Assad one.
It was a two-run
You were okay with the Assad one?
It's what I said that day. Is like, you're kind of stuck in between a rock and a hard place at that point because you need to get some length out of him, hope to get a few more outs from him. But maybe he was done at the time, but I'm against it in the fact that I don't think there was a right answer, because either which way, had it gone wrong, you could have criticized it, I think.
Yes.
I mean, I saw that the Godfather says his biggest... What did the Godfather say? Something about his biggest impact is that he's not Ross. Yeah, but for the money they're paying him, he needs to be more than not David Ross managing.
Yeah.
I think this is the hardest one 12 games in to actually come up with a real feel for whether it's a positive or a negative so far this season. I think the other ones are all pretty clear. Yeah.
This one
I could see anybody arguing either way.
His worst game was definitely on Monday, because it didn't matter what pitcher he brought in after Assad, it didn't work out.
And maybe that's not his fault. We said that about Ross a few times too. I don't know. But it doesn't hurt. It does hurt that he has three main arms that are out.
I'm glad you say that, because there's everyone who just wanted to blame David Ross for everything last year.
Well, and sometimes it wasn't right.
Well, a lot of times
it wasn't
right.
They're going to start calling you Little Ross now.
Yeah. Well, don't call me Little Ross.
Grandpa Ross. Grandpa Ross already exists.
Did call me Grandpa Ross.
Great Grandpa Ross.
You couldn't be right about Monday, but I'm sticking to my guns on yesterday.
You didn't
because
like
it was
two.
A two-run game, man. Two-run game, and we know Kyle Hendricks a third time through the lineup. I'm not going to repeat myself. Yeah. It was a two-run game. You could have won the game still. And we wouldn't have sat on our post-game and talked about Kyle Hendricks being washed for an hour if he had just taken Kyle Hendricks out after the fifth inning.
And if he had taken Assad out, he would have a scoreless season.
Yeah.
You have a perfect season so far.
I also think one small thing from Council is the willingness to be aggressive with how he uses guys, whether that's bullpen or whatever. But like one that I always think about is like they bring up Ben Brown Saturday. Ben Brown could have easily just been the steel replacement, wait for Wednesday, put him in there, and he just takes the rotation spot. But it was like, no, we're down an arm. We need length. We need a guy who can give us bulk. Bring up Ben Brown in Texas, and if we have to use him today, we're going to use him. They ended up having to use him that day, and he wasn't obviously afraid to go in and use him and then figure out how to get through Wednesday's game afterwards. I think that is one thing where you didn't bring up Ben Brown because you wanted him to start for you on Wednesday. You brought him up because you needed a guy who could give you length, and you weren't afraid to use him in a situation where you needed length. I thought that that's a small thing, but it's like, okay, like he's clearly worried about winning this game. Like, yeah, that matters. What you do on Justin Steele's start date, it matters. But you're clearly worried about winning this game today more than that, and trying to figure out how to fit the pieces together on after that. I think that's a good sign of a manager, is just the willingness to be aggressive with guys and not being worried about what's happening in a few days from now and how am I going to figure that out.
And I think the chat's right. I saw the comment too about they like his use of the DH, the creative use of the DH. I don't know how many different lineups we've seen 12 games into the season, but we've definitely seen a handful, yeah. Right? Oh, a lot of guys getting random days off and randomly being the DH.
Did Nico get a day off?
That they've used getting Talkman into the game that way pretty creatively.
I'm going to say it. David Ross did that too. I'm just going to say it.
Rossi.
It's not a change, right? It's a good thing to do.
Oh, sorry.
It is a good sign. It's just not a change from what was going on last year.
The other thing I like,
in my opinion,
I can't believe we didn't bring this up.
Huh.
The other thing that I like, I can't believe we didn't bring this
up. As one of the 12 storylines,
as part of the council, the council experience so far, zero bunting.
There hasn't been a bunt.
Oh, there has not been a bunt. There was a couple
baseball.
Early bunts from Ross last year, right?
Yeah.
I don't
remember when Patrick Wisdom bunted.
When was the Hosmer bunt? That was early too, right?
Patrick Wisdom bunted was a bad idea.
He wasn't.
Now, Tyler in the chat pointed out a scenario yesterday's game in which they could have bunted, and perhaps I wouldn't have hated it because Dylan Cease was pitching well. He says leadoff double yesterday, down 4-2. Amaya's up, followed by Mastroboni. Doesn't bunt, tighten the game, manufacture a run, put the pressure on. The player's got to execute. Mastroboni, I've never seen him bunt before. He is a utility player. Maybe he's good with the bat and bunting.
I think he's talking about Amaya bunting.
I wouldn't want Amaya bunting, but like if it was Mastroboni, I understand it. I don't like bunting when you're down two runs, even though at that point in the game it was still like the middle innings. But you're giving away outs. Like that's what there's two sides to bunting, and the only time bunting is good is if the players actually execute and get it right. Because if they don't execute and don't get it right, then we're blaming the manager. Because the Cubs couldn't execute a damn bunt last year every time David Ross called for
it's
it.
It's a lost art.
Yeah. I'm
hopefully
just
forever.
I'm just not a fan of bunting ever. Literally ever. Unless it's a pitcher up there and the DH doesn't exist in a National League.
Although the only home run I ever hit in Little League was indeed a bunt. My mom was a scorekeeper and the kid threw it into right field and I went all the way around the bases.
The old,
home run.
The old Little League one, yeah.
Yep. Hey, thanks to everybody that joined us on this off day chat. Barb, the godmother, says, I don't think they're live tomorrow. We are not live tomorrow, Barb. However, Brendan and Corey will have the next live edition of the CHGO Cubs podcast coming up on Sunday after their series finale with the Mariners. What are you trying to show, Cody?
This, Barb, this is for Barb. Michael I'm showing Bush. Michael Bush's baseball savant. And I'm going to explain it to you like Hold you're on. 5 years old, Barb.
Steven's
if it's red, it means good. If it's blue, it means it needs improved or is average.
It's got more
all right?
red there, yeah.
This is the easiest way I can explain it to you, Barb. If red is there, that means good, okay? There's a lot of red.
You let the godmother cub however she wants to cub.
She wants to send freaking Michael Bush down because Garrett Cooper right, is better. Well, I'm not letting that pass. I'm not letting it pass.
I'm sorry. I'm not either.
She will be a Michael Bush fan before the end of the season. I am determined. All right.
Hit the like button on
and
the
And I gave
out.
Her credit about Jose Quas. I openly well, said
before,
that I could be wrong
Barb
about
Barb and
that.
Cody come to blows, we better end the show.
Cody's turning into another Raging Bull.
Yeah.
The Raging Bull's back.
And it should be me because I'm just like a week and a half off steroids. So it should be me coming off the roids. Thanks for checking out the CHGO Cubs podcast. We appreciate it. Hit the like button on the way out. We'll see you next week. Brendan and Corey on Sunday. Until then, thanks for watching and fly the W.
All silly like the mayor.